I don't think you've got me, have you?
I can see you, Steph.
I got you, Steph.
Okay. I just have the phone because I couldn't get in on the computer.
Yeah, I recognize your phone number, Steph, so I got you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you all for joining us this afternoon. This is the Ashland Park and Recreation Commission Ashland Senior Advisory Committee, ASAC. It's Monday, July 11th. It's 3:30, and we are holding this meeting virtually via Zoom. And first, I would like to welcome our newest member, Mariko. Thank you very much for joining us. And Eileen had suggested that maybe the committee members could just go around and make a kind of a brief introduction of a little bit of background and maybe how long you've been on the advisory committee. And I'll be happy to start that off. So most of you know, I was originally involved with the Senior Advisory Committee as a member of the Park and Recreation Commission. Now I'm an at-large member, program member, and newly elected as chair for another year. So it's a pleasure to be here. And maybe I can just wheel around to Jim Bachman. Maybe you can introduce yourself.
I will do that. I'm relatively or very new to the this committee. I was appointed by the council to fill an open position on on the Parks Commission earlier this year, and I have been involved with development of the new senior services division through my wife, who was chair of the ad hoc committee from the day when they recommended how to do this. So I've been following this now for, I don't know, what is it, 5 years or so. So, and prior to becoming a commissioner, I served for 4 years on the citizen budget.
Great. How about Kathy?
My name is Kathy McNeil, and I worked for 3 years with Food and Friends at the Ashland Senior Center, which is the meal program, the daily meal program. And I volunteered in the office somewhat of that time. I've been on the ASAC committee now, I think it's going on a year. I think it's a year. And I've been working in the office, well, 2 days now a week for the last 4 or 5 months.
Great. How about Corey, Frank, next?
Hello, can you hear me okay?
A little quiet, but yes.
I'm a retired registered nurse, and I think I've been on the committee about 6 months. I don't think it's been too long. So I'm still kind of getting oriented and just have done a lot of volunteer work. I'm volunteering for Ollie and various other areas and very, very concerned about our senior services. So that's why I'm here.
Great. Thank you. How about Steph?
Hi. I have a background with the Parks Commission a number of years ago. I've also a counselor for the city. I've worked as a liaison to most of the commissions that we have. I've worked to try to make Ashland an age-friendly city with regard to ARP's guidelines for that. So basically, I'm concerned about senior services in terms of what priority it is for the city and how the impact of what's happening with parks might impact the senior services.
Great. Great. Thank you. How about Ann?
Hi, Mariko. I have been involved with the senior services area for a number of years since retiring in healthcare communications, and I've been on RVCOG Disability Services, on the State Steering Committee on Long-Term Care, and have been was with the Ashland Senior Program Advisory Committee on the restructuring of the program, and then moved over to ASAC and completed one term there, and I'm in my second of two terms. And I'm also involved with Ollie, and I'm the co-chair of the Livable Ashland Alliance, which is the WHOAARP Age-Friendly Cities and States Network.
Great. Thank you, Ann. How about Deborah? We're just doing a brief introduction for Noriko.
Noriko, well, we had a brief introduction. We met for coffee, but that's okay. I think I've been with ASAC for just, I think, going on 2 years now, I think, maybe, yeah. And, you know, my work is really end of life, and I specialize in end of life planning, advising, being there, and my new job is with the End of Life Choices Oregon, doing all the intakes for the state of Oregon for anyone interested in wanting to use end of life choices. Which definitely deals with seniors almost exclusively, but you know, not really anything through the senior services. Ashland, but I guess my other is just, I know I'm on the Ashland Newcomers Committee, so people that are new to Ashland, I help them get connected to other people. And I'm a past geriatric care manager, so I am looking to begin that service again. And that's my spiel.
That's your story. You're sticking to it.
Yes.
Okay. Well, once again, Noriko, wanted to welcome you to our committee and look forward to your input as we move along.
Right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Should I introduce myself?
Why don't you? Go ahead.
All right. Thank you very much. Hi. Hello. I'm Noriko Toyokawa, and I am assistant professor of psychology and then also at SOU. And then I am also affiliated faculty with healthcare administration programs and aging concentration. And then I came after that Mary Russell Miller. And then my area is adult development and aging. And then, I taught at California State University last kind of 6 years. But I have been always looking for the position in Oregon because I know Oregon is very strong state in the aging area, the gerontology. And then my area is more health promotion and health education for the older people. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. We'll move ahead with the item two on our agenda is approval of the minutes from May 9th. I think Eileen sent a copy along with the invite to the meeting. So I'd look for a motion to approve the minutes unless there's any changes or corrections.
I approve.
Okay, so I have a second maybe from Corey, since you raised your hand. Okay, all in favor of the minutes, approval of the minutes, you can raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, minutes have been approved. Additions or deletions to the agenda. One item that Eileen and I were just briefly discussing before we started. I think maybe we can answer the question on cutbacks at the senior center, maybe during our standing reports portion of it, and maybe if Eileen and Jim want to somehow, you know, explain what we know and what moving forward for the rest of the group, I think that would answer that question. So, Corey.
May I just ask, do you have any idea when the survey results will be back?
The city survey?
Yeah.
You know, I had heard that July 8th was the last day they were accepting forms back. And I think they were, I'm not sure how they're tabulating, but I heard that they were tabulating the results as the surveys came in. So I don't know the exact answer to that question, but I know that the gathering of surveys is complete.
Okay.
If I understand it. We have no one scheduled for public input today, so we will move directly to the standing reports. We have about 25 minutes to move through these. And
Mike, can I ask one question on the last topic? I'm just wondering if Steph has any more detail than you just related on the timing of the results on the survey from her council seat position.
Sure. Do you want to chime in on that at all, Steph?
I know they're hoping to get it out before school ends. Actually, that doesn't work, does it? It's already ended. They're trying to get more responses. Eva wants to get it completed as soon as possible. I don't have a date though.
Okay. So I think that's all we know at this point.
We don't know.
So I'll turn it over to you, Jim, for APRC liaison update. Anything you want to
say? We have a lot of things going on these days, primarily related to the budget, but not exclusively. Mr. Black, our director, has last week presented to us his proposed cuts. I believe there is support on the count on the commission to approve them this Wednesday. We'll see if that happens. There are $350,000 in cuts to the entire organization. His main point, I'm not going to go through all the detail, his main point was with the latest cuts, which add up to $350,000, we're being asked to reduce our FTEs by one FTE, 1.0 FTEs. And his recommendation is to do that by not hiring temps and seasonal workers. So I think everybody's just got more time with the commission and on this group than I do, understands that is going to impact our ability to take care of the parks. The other items he's also recommended for himself only a furlough that will reduce our costs, an additional furlough to the one that's already in place, and that we no longer would manage Pioneer Hall, because at this point it's just an expense, we can't generate revenue. Then there are not a lot of other details about we can still cut equipment replacement and materials and services without impacting our operations for at least this year. I have a personal concern that if we continue to put off maintenance and equipment replacement, that we're going to end up with a tougher nut to crack farther down the road in an era of inflation. So I hope that we're not put in a position where we can't take care of our stuff. So that totals 350. We probably will come to a decision on that Wednesday in our next business meeting. We are looking at this next business meeting at art, a final art project being that has been approved by the Public Arts Commission to be placed in, we're being asked simply to approve it being placed in Ashland Creek Park. And I'm looking forward to that conversation. In addition to that, we have are absorbing the news that the City Council has placed the city manager's recommendation that the charter be changed so that our director would report directly to him in a nutshell, which would change the way we've been doing business for the last 114 years, I think. It would be a major change if the citizens of Ashland were to approve that. I'm not gonna go much farther than that. You're gonna be hearing a lot about it. And there's also a change in the way that food and beverage taxes are absorbed by the city financially that may or may not impact our funding going forward. And again, I'll let you read the ballot information about that as it comes out. I don't know, is that about it? I think so. I'll let Eileen talk to specific senior division issues.
Okay, well, that brings us up to date with what's going on with APRC. I'll turn over to Steph. Do you have anything you'd want to bring us up to date on from council?
I think that the issues discussed were pretty much the main issues that are happening right now. Looking at the structure of how parks relates to the city in terms of employee policies and also who has control over leadership. That's certainly something that the citizens are really going to have to decide, because that will have to be on the ballot for those. So certainly it would be important for people to look at how they feel the leadership of parks would best protect parks. In terms of I think the other issues that are probably important is that we're looking at the changes in how commissions are established, who has responsibility. Some of the commissions will become committees, I believe, and really be just involved with staff. There will be a reduction in the amount of committees that are being utilized by the council, and there will be more ad hoc groups. So that's what I know.
Go ahead, Ann. You have a question for Steph?
No, I have a sort of a comment, I would say.
Okay.
I do feel that we should be mindful as an advisory committee that these changes that are happening are things to be concerned about as they affect people of all ages in Ashland. But I'm thinking about things like, say, for example, in the maintenance area, there's sort of public safety issues involved, trip and falls, all that kind of stuff, that if the parks were being maintained at the level that they had been customarily, that some of these things could be noticed and avoided. And so I do have strong concerns about the budget. And of course, how it may or may not affect Senior Services Division, but considering the population in Ashland, I think these are concerns that we as individuals and then we as advocates for senior services ought to be paying attention to in our advocacy efforts, and be mindful of the fact that just like our Senior Services Division serves people of all ages from the standpoint of their families who are having to deal with some pretty challenging things involving seniors, that any of these cuts affect people of all ages.
All right. Thank you. Let's move on to the education report, and I'll turn it over to Natalie.
Thanks, Mike. Well, we have some great presentations coming up. So this Wednesday is our ice cream social for seniors and their families. So if you would like to attend, please give us a call so we can count you and make sure we have enough supplies. But we just hit 81 in the number of signups, which is a large number for us. So people are definitely excited to finally have this annual event back in person. So we're looking forward to that. It'd be great to see you if you want to come. And then later on in the summer, August, we have Dwight Wilson, the executive director of Celia's House, offering a presentation on end-of-life planning. In August, we have a local author, Sue DeMarinis, presenting on one of her books, The Station Master's Wife, about the train station here in Ashland. And Sue was actually scheduled to give this presentation in April of 2020, and we finally rescheduled it. So it's great that we can continue some of those things we had started before. Later on in August, we have our yoga teacher, Sherry Theobald, is going to offer a Yoga Basics and Beyond workshop, a free workshop to get deeper into some of the forms she teaches so that people can learn how to adjust for various limitations on their body. And then this fall, Eileen and I are very excited that our partnership with Jackson County Library Services has yielded the fruit we wanted, and Jackson County Library Services, Digital Services Department and Adult Services Department will be coming down once a month to teach a computer basics class. So there are going to be different classes on PC, Mac, Android, and then how to be safe online and how to protect your privacy. So this is something that we've had a huge demand for from our public, and are really excited that we're finally getting this off the ground.
All right. Thank you very much. And I'll turn it over to Eileen Glatt, and she can give us the superintendent update report.
Thank you. And I want to echo Natalie's invitation about the ice cream social. It has been several years since we've had this opportunity, and I think those who've been on the ASAC for a while might remember that it's an opportunity to actually meet some of the patrons of the senior center. So if you have the opportunity to come, I would encourage you to come early, definitely by quarter of one, because I know our early birds will be there. We've tried to carve out 20 to 30 minutes of more social time before the entertainment starts. We actually have the Broadway Dance for Boomers class is going to do a very quick little show. They asked if they could perform, and we've squeezed them in. And then we have Ashland Brass performing. So it should be a lot of fun. Should also be pretty hot. And I want to thank Corey, who offered also to help set up and volunteer that way. So that's cool, too. But mostly being there just to mix, it's an opportunity to connect and let people know you're with the advisory committee, and maybe somebody has an opinion they want to share with you or some feedback if you want to do that. So I think I always say, please refer to my report because I've put in so much there for you to be aware of. But some of the most important thing probably right now is to address Corey's question about the budget. And I apologize, we've had the budget in so many meetings, I didn't think to add that in its own item, but I probably should have again. And we do have a speaker coming, so I want to make sure I don't wax too long on this. But the gist of it is, you might all recall that there were cuts to APRC at the beginning of the pandemic. And at that time, among other, there were quite a few layoffs, but that included three office assistants were laid off at that time. And later, one of the three positions was brought back in the subsequent fiscal year. We did not lose our office assistant at that time. And I was very grateful for that, because most of you are have been with us long enough to be aware that we did a lot of intervention during COVID. Even though we had our doors shut, we were the information source for many, many seniors in our community who didn't know where to turn. Most agencies weren't answering their phone. And because we didn't have a staff cut at that time, and because we had the technology to quarantine at home and isolate at home and still answer the phone, we were able to really help meet people's needs and get them connected to services, call those behind the scenes numbers that we knew for our colleagues, get people connected to what they needed. We were able to keep the food program, continue hosting our partner, Rogue Valley Council of Governments, and it, with their Food and Friends program, so that those meals could continue being staged and go out with Ashland volunteers into homes, and people could come pick up meals outside, those that used to come in person, and on through a really enormous vaccination initiative. Now, of course, we're open again, and we got fully up and running at the beginning of March. We lost our office assistant the end of March due to some other circumstances, but weren't able to rehire because of the city hiring freeze. Now that the Parks and Rec is having to cut more budget, you know, having already done cuts and only brought back a little bit of that, you can imagine there weren't a lot of places to turn. And so in all fairness, really, we had to lose some in senior services, not because the commission or Director Black, or really, as far as I know, anybody at the city, on the city council, wants to cut services to seniors, but it's that, you know, proverbial water from a stone, you know, where are you going to get it? And that is an issue all the way across the city of having to make painful cuts where we know there's still great need. So as of this fiscal year that started July 1, we believe that it will be formally decided by the commission this Wednesday evening, and you're welcome to listen to that meeting. But the proposal on the table is among the many cuts that Commissioner Bachman described. One of them is our office assistant two would not be funded again. We had a 0.75 of a full-time equivalent. So that means, for those of you that aren't familiar with that vernacular, it means 30 hours a week rather than 40. That's what we've had all this time, in addition to Natalie and I being full-time positions. We will now have 0.25, part of a shared position shared with the rest of Parks and Rec. So the Recreation Division, the Nature Center, just answering the public phone, it will still be beneficial for us mostly. We're hoping for some help with registrations that almost all come to Natalie right now for our programs, and some help with vacations that are pretty challenging right now to run everything with just one of us in the office. Thank goodness for Kathy McNeil and several other volunteers who've been at least helping answer the phones and do some reception. So that's been our response to not having an office assistant, is piecing together a patchwork of about 20 hours a week of volunteers. The other response is that we made a decision that I shared with you last meeting to close on Fridays. We are no longer open at the senior center for walk-ins, for activities, or taking phone calls. And that is allowing Natalie and I to do the work that we can no longer do during the week. Our jobs were already quite full. We already both did, especially Natalie, some coverage of the front because we never had full-time coverage of our front desk. But it's been wonderful to have volunteers with the more routine things, but not something that our volunteers can cover every item that used to be done by someone who worked 30 hours a week. Someone who's there 4 to 8 hours can only cover and learn so much. So that is allowing us to function. I was pleased to tell you at our last meeting that we weren't moving. I mean, we weren't losing any activities. We did move our weekly movie, and some a yoga class that was on Friday had already asked to move to Thursday, our Zoom yoga. And that was why we chose Friday as a day that we could reasonably close and not give up any of the activities. But it means we're that much busier on Tuesday. I've noticed we really can't get anything else done but running the activities. You know, it's a trade-off. So that's the impact on senior services. Would it be better to have go back to at least our 0.75 office assistant? Yes, that would be much better. We would be able to serve our public more thoroughly. I don't think that anybody's missing getting served because, you know, Kathy comes in on Monday and she returns all those calls from Friday. I think the net services are similar, services and activities. What's different is that we can't think as expansively as we did for the last few years. When the program was restructured, we were tasked with goals of being more expansive and serving more of our senior community and spending time on outreach and publicity. And so all of those are taking a little bit of a hit. You know, literally every week some idea comes up or someone from one of our partners asks us to add something. And Natalie and I think it over. We don't say no to everything, but we have to remember where is that staffing resource coming from to be expansive and to add things. So that's the impact. I don't know how it will be passed, but as I said, I don't know that you can certainly attend a Parks and Rec meeting and say, well, we don't want senior services to be the one cut, but then you have to think about, well, what will be cut, then has to be cut somewhere else. So I'm going to stop there. Jim, do you have anything to add from the perspective of the commission in terms of senior services in particular? Hope you're muted, Jim.
No, I think you've covered well, and I thank you from the commission, from my commissioner seat, for keeping things going as well as you have, and continuing to serve as many of our seniors as we can. I think you're right; it's getting tighter. The entire fiscal year that we're just entered, which will end next June 30th, is going to be across the city, not just us, across the city, tougher to negotiate with the cuts that are coming.
Very good. I appreciate the input from both of you regarding that, and hopefully that answers some of the questions that committee members have. I just wanted to ask, so is our guest scheduled to come in at like a quarter after four? Is that it?
I think that's his plan, so we might be able to start him early. But if
he's here.
Oh, he's here already. Oh, that's great. There. Hi, Steve. I see your name. If I may take a couple minutes, there was one other item that I wanted to address.
No, I'm not ready to move on. I mean, we had a Livable Ashland Alliance update.
Yeah.
As well. I just wanted to know what the time frame for the.
We had Stephen last because he wasn't sure that he could get here this early, but I think it's up to you, Mike, if you want to shuffle things to accommodate our speaker.
Let's do it. Let's go ahead and
okay.
introduce it, and then we can wrap
finish
up.
Finish my report for a couple minutes. The other thing I wanted to bring to your attention was what I put in my report as the possible use of the senior center as a cooling center, as the city grapples with that. I think the trend, I don't know for sure, but I think the trend is going to be to use Pioneer Hall. I've had some subsequent discussions with some of the city staff, and form a relationship with the library. So those of you, hopefully all of you got your NICSL alert today. Hopefully you're all signed up for NICSL emergency alerts. And the alert today is that the cooling center is at the library in a partnership with them. So, you know, we'll continue to be open. Our goal is to serve seniors, not become something else that then takes away our ability to serve seniors. But to the degree we can make those merge, it's possible the senior center might be used at some point, but it doesn't look very likely right now. And if there's no questions on any other part of my report, anybody have questions?
Well, I was just going to mention, it looked like pretty good news that your challenge grant, though it didn't get picked up by the larger group, that Oregon AARP picked that up.
Yes, and I realized I've jumped the gun slightly. They've asked it not to be public until they make their announcement, which I thought is coming any day now. So don't spread it around.
Okay.
But it does look like we're going to get to build our outdoor venue. And as COVID continues to dog us in so many ways, that's exciting and you'll see tomorrow, if you come to the Ice Cream Social, that a little safer, smoother surface will be good for our events as well. But that is good news.
Okay. And the Ice Cream Social is actually on Wednesday, correct? July 15th?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wednesday starts at 1 p.m. I encourage you to arrive early so that you can chat with people.
Okay.
Thank you. So I think I'm done.
Excellent. Eileen, did you want to introduce our guest speaker?
I would be honored to do so. Everyone, we have Steve Hirsch, who is the administrator for Ashland Asante Community Hospital, or maybe I said that reverse, Asante Ashland Community Hospital. Is that right, Steve? And Steve is here to talk to us about their age-friendly hospital initiative. So, and I think you have some slides to share. Is that right, Steve?
Share my screen if I can.
Yeah, and let's make sure Natalie's given you the right permission for that.
You should be able to, Steve. I have made you a co-host.
There we go. And I think we're good. All right. So everybody can see that slide, the splash screen, right? Perfect. Okay. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the work that you do. A little bit about me. I do live in Ashland. I appreciate the work you're doing for the senior community because I have been getting my AARP invitations. So thank you. I am an internist by training. I've been in practice 35 years now. I've worked in private practice in Los Angeles. I moved up here in 2002 to be a hospitalist at Rogue Valley, which I did for about 10 years, overlapped that with opening a small private practice in Ashland. And when Dr. Shapley left last year and this position became open, after long thought, I decided to take this position as administrator at Asante Ashland and vice president of medical affairs. Vice president of medical affairs means that I attend to medical staff issues, but also assist on the leadership team of Asante. Ashland Hospital, before my tenure, started looking at what was going on in our community and what we needed to do to address the needs of our community. A few demographic slides. As we know, in our country, the population over age 65 is growing. We are in here somewhere at about 56% and projected that population over age 65 continues to grow. In Southern Oregon, we have a population of 26% over age 65, as opposed to 18% throughout the state. So we have a disproportionately high number of folks over 65, identifying that as a population that we need to serve. In Ashland, I'm not sure if I can get rid of the pictures here. There we go. Ashland, the percentage is 24% over age 65. And at our hospital, over 56%, at least during this period, which was between the Delta and Omicron surges, at our hospital, over 50% of people are over age 65. So we identified that as a population that we needed to serve. We were hearing from the community about that. My colleagues and predecessors looked at a number of programs available throughout the country and settled on the age-friendly health system program to serve this community. Why do we need to do something special? Well, this cartoon illustrates what we all know intuitively. As we get older, our physiologic reserves begin to decrease. And they decrease gradually to the point where we have no reserve left. And as we get no reserve left, we start going down that slippery slope of things going wrong. And the question is, what can we do in this area here as physiologic reserves decrease when people are in the hospital, which is a dangerous place, to try to preserve that resilience that is so important? Our aging population, we know, needs specialized care as we get older because of this decrease in resilience combined with illness that we all acquire over time. We need focused attention. And we know that in our area, coordination among specialists is tough. The age-friendly health system is a program sponsored by the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, as well as a number of charitable organizations, primarily the John Hancock Foundation and Catholic Healthcare Association. But the important thing to me is that the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, if you don't know of it, is probably the leading non-governmental agency for quality care in our country. These are the sponsors of the organization. And why do it to Ashland? Why not do it at Rogue? Why not do it at other hospitals? Why are we looking at doing this here? Ashland Hospital has a tradition, a heritage of being a, as one of my private patients, one of my prior patients told me when I went into them, it's big medicine with a light touch. We try to be a high touch facility to really attend to people's needs. Do that because we are a smaller facility. We all tend to know each other. The doctors on call today have worked with the physical therapists who are on call today for years. They've worked with the same nurses for years. People work as a team and efforts that have developed over time. We have a tradition of high patient satisfaction and a lot of community support. As Eileen alluded to, I work on other committees. I meet with the Ashland Chamber. I meet with the Livable Ashland Group, as well as individuals. And these groups are asking me about this program. People want a geriatrics approach in our community. We just, for your information, Asante has one geriatrician or one physician who is specialized in geriatrics, but he has a general practice, and he's in White City. And there is a nurse practitioner in Ashland who has a special interest in geriatrics and a physician's assistant in Grants Pass who has a special interest in geriatrics. But there aren't that many geriatricians around. So we're going to step in and try to do this work ourselves. The age-friendly health system program itself is a wraparound program. It's an add-on program. People come into the hospital with their medical condition, pneumonia, infection, fracture, pain, whatever it may be. And this is a program meant to add on to that and coordinate our care for that patient so we can envelop them in the system. And the age-friendly health system looks at this by breaking it down into four M's, right? It's an easy way to remember it. But the four M's are what matters, being sure that we know our patients, that we know what's important to our patients and what's important in terms of their goals, and make sure that our care aligns with their goals. Some people may come into the hospital and say, hey, I was doing perfectly well before I got sick, and I want to resume my normal activities after the hospital. Versus another person who might come in and say, you know I've been sick, and I've got a lot of issues, and I've got a lot of pain, and I know you can't fix me, and all I want to do is survive the next 3 months so I can get to my granddaughter's wedding. Those are very different approaches to care. And it's important that we recognize those differences so that we can align what we're planning to what the patient wishes. Medications is the next M. We know that people come into the hospital and experience adverse events. And many of those events are around medication. In general, with this program, we are going to do two things primarily. One is to identify if people are coming into the hospital on dangerous or high-risk medications. You may or may not know that there's been a lot of work done around this over the last probably two decades in healthcare, and there are lists of high-risk medications. We may not be able to stop high-risk medications when people come into the hospital, but we can certainly identify those medications as topics for further or for future consideration with the primary care practitioner. Our other initiative in the M medication field is to not start any new high-risk medications. We did a survey around this at the beginning of this program and determined that those medications that we would tend to start that are high-risk primarily are going to be pain medications or sleep medications. We already have initiatives in place to very carefully monitor and reduce opiate use. But with this program, we are going to pay special attention to sleep in order to try to avoid initiating any new dangerous sleeping medications. The next topic is mentation or cognition. And the idea is to help people maintain their pre-existing level of cognition when they come in the hospital. We've all heard stories where people come into the hospital and after a medium or long hospitalization, they just are confused or not thinking clearly. And that obviously impacts quality of life. That could be preventable. And we want to do everything that we can to help people maintain their level of cognition when they come into the hospital. We want to prevent dementia and depression and delirium across settings of care. The fourth M is mobility. And same story there. We've all heard of people who come into the hospital walking, but they've been at bed rest long enough that it's hard to get up and move around, or they try to get up and move around and fall and hurt something. Recognize that all of these are interacting, right? If we put somebody on a medication that interferes with their cognition, then they might not move around well. So the idea of the 4M program is to consider all of these as one unit, although we break them down. Asante and many other hospitals already have initiatives aimed at many of these things. And we've done, as part of this program, done a survey in our health system of where we address these issues. But the idea here is to bring these all into one place and think about them as a unit. So I talked a little bit about medication and focus on sleep. And we're going to emphasize non-pharmacologic issues. People come in and we want to make sure that at 9 or 10 or 11 o'clock or whatever time your bedtime is, that we turn the lights off and that we try to be quiet in the hospital and that we use background music or whatever a person might use at home to help them sleep. But the idea there is to spend time talking to the patient and saying, how can we help you sleep without giving you a sleeping pill? We don't want to find out that it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you haven't gone to sleep yet. That just sets you up for failure for the next couple of days. One thing I didn't mention is as part of this program, we have significant foundation funding from the Asante Foundation, and we've received some funding from the Ashland Community Healthcare Foundation. And we've used some of that to engage a consultant, a geriatrics consultant from UCSF, who has experience working through this program and has shared with us what they are doing. So we are really building on best practices learned elsewhere. Mobility, again, these are mostly reminders for me. Ashland and Asante already have initiatives around maintaining and continuing mobility. And the idea, again, is to keep this front of mind for our older population and not lose track of it. Same thing for mentation. We already pay attention to delirium and addressing factors that would contribute to delirium and make sure that we avoid those, including sleep, including getting people up and moving them around, including engaging with family, right? During COVID, we lost some of that. Families weren't allowed to come in. But we now certainly encourage families to visit, but we want to go a step further and talk to families about the quality of your visit and how are you going to work with your loved one to maintain their cognition and what matters. We're going to go about aligning our care with what matters to the patient in a number of ways. The first is something we think we do well, but this program will help us capture that, and that is ascertain that patients have advanced directives or pulsed forms and take the time to capture those if those are not in the hospital database and actually look at them and talk with the patient about them. And then elicit people's wishes and values. And there's a number of different ways to do that. One way is to spend time with the patient and talk about their life story and review what's come before and what people are interested in doing now and looking forward to doing in the future. The surprise question is something that comes in and out of the literature, but it basically says if you are looking at your loved one, would you be surprised if they die in the next 6 months? That's a hard question to ask sometimes, but that sort of almost confrontational question is critical, because if the family all says, well, no, I wouldn't be surprised, that may change our care plan. And that may make a difference in how aggressive we are or what sorts of treatments we use for somebody, what sorts of treatments we recommend for somebody. The Go Wish deck is something that came out of the COHO initiative from a few years ago. I don't know how many of you remember that, but that was an initiative from John Forsythe, who is a cardiologist, who was in Medford and started an initiative through the Valley. Ashlyn was very involved in that, of establishing advanced directives and getting people to fill out their forms. And one of the tools that was used, I want to bring back and use in this initiative, it's a deck of cards that are basically prompts. What's important to you? To have my family with me, to have my cat with me, to be able to have a religious input to my care, those sorts of things, so that we can really truly understand what patients' values are. So those things are exciting to me because they haven't really existed in our care thus far. What will this look like for a hospitalized older patient? Well, people will come into the hospital, and on the first day, we're going to pay attention to their sleep, particularly using non-medical measures. We're going to try to get the family involved in mobility and getting people up and moving around, provide the family with cues to support cognition. Talk about what matters early in the hospitalization, not wait till somebody gets really sick, but have those conversations early. We're going to try to facilitate communication with the outpatient team, so what we learn about the patient goes back to the primary care provider and follows the patient out of the hospital. And we're going to do that by providing a written summary of what we've learned and worked with the patient on to the patient at the time of discharge. Lots of community support around this, as I talked about. The Asante Foundation has a commitment to us. Expert consultation we talked about. We are going to be doing continuing education, not just for the physicians in the hospital, but for our medical community, including nurses, including pharmacists, including therapists. There is support for nursing education around geriatric care. There's support for physical plant improvements. There is such a thing as age-friendly architecture, such that when you design a hospital room, you have contrast between the color on the walls and the color on the floors, so people can see where the floor is. So we're excited about trying to bring in those sorts of improvements. And then the foundation has enough money to help us recruit a chair in geriatrics. So we are looking far and wide across the country to try to recruit someone who has academic credentials and can help us push this program forward. This is initially going to be at Ashland Hospital. We hope to do it well. We hope to do it consistently such that the program grows organically to our other hospitals and to our outpatient initiatives and to the community. Any questions?
Thanks a lot for the presentation. You might want to not share your screen so I can see everyone in the room, unless you have more.
There we go. Sorry, I had to find the button.
A question.
Okay.
My question is, you're talking about coordinating the care. Are you coordinating the services and so on through a case manager? How are you ensuring that there's the coordination of the care?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. We are actually, since December, we've been meeting with a work group twice a month, every other week, to work through the details of how we're going to do this. And that group has physicians, nurses, pharmacists, discharge planners, physical therapists, occupational therapists, social worker, as well as our information technology support people. So this is truly multidisciplinary. And to your question, definitely the discharge planners are very involved, particularly in that what matters piece.
Okay. Other questions for Stephen? Go ahead, Steph. You're muted. There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. My questions would be, will there be any psychological or counseling assistance or specialists in that field that will be working with you on this program? And will you be looking at any use of any kind of psychedelic, marijuana or psilocybin, which some places are using in terms of preparing for death?
So in our state, psilocybin and other hallucinogenics are permitted only within very narrow confines. And Asante has not yet developed any kind of a program in that. Cannabis products are still not consistent with Asante's mission at that time. So those things are not going to be utilized right now. Would there be a role for those in the future? I can't say, but this program provides that kind of a framework in order to study those things.
Mm-hmm.
Psychology and mental health at Ashland, our mental health capabilities are via telehealth with our colleagues at Rogue. And we use that on a case-by-case basis. On-site mental health experts tend to be the social workers as part of the discharge planner team. And what we would do would be, as part of this program, we might identify that somebody is experiencing some cognitive difficulties and those may relate to their mental health history. Let's place a consultation and make sure that we're getting the mental health support for this person that we need. So that would be more of a case-by-case basis as well. It's not intrinsically part of this program at its core, other than to identify problems and seek help outside the program.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Ann.
Well, certainly thank you for the presentation and for the work that Asante is doing in this area. I think one of the things that you and I have discussed, Steve, is that the primary care provider, that piece is an important part of it, and with the shortage that we're seeing here throughout the Rogue Valley, that some of that before and after care, so it's not just the specialist in geriatrics, but I also think it's the, you know, your garden variety primary care physician shortage that hopefully will get addressed. And the communication with the care support team for that person afterwards, because in many cases it's working adult children who are trying to manage the care of their older family member, and so getting them in the loop so that they're plugged into what has to happen with mom or dad or whomever. It's a big tall order you guys have set for yourself.
Well, thank you, Ann. Yes, we have talked about this in at length. The primary care shortage seems to be nationwide because of a lot of factors. And having been in primary care, having been on the other end of this, where patients leave the hospital, come back to me, and it takes work. It takes a significant effort to discover what happened in the hospital. What did you talk about? Did you talk about the sleeping medicine that you're taking? Or why did you come back on a sleeping medicine that you weren't on before? I hope that my prior experience brings to this an identification of the need to communicate. And I hope to do that through a written document. Ashland already has a pretty good habit of picking up the phone and calling the primary care doctor, but that's not always possible. And I want to be able to put this in writing in a document that's very clear, saying that we addressed your medication issues. And as part of that, we want to make sure that you talk to your primary care doctor about medicine X. And that will be there as an instruction. I also like this program because it is, by nature, not a program as much as an initiative. And the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, I believe, is probably exercising their tradition by making this program very iterative. The idea is to start with some very basic steps, plan out what you're doing, study what you've done, and then adjust the program accordingly. And what you're talking about, community support and community involvement, lends itself very well to that. We won't be able to do this initially, but I think you and I, Ann, have talked about this. My fantasy would be to bring in community support and say, look, we've got folks that we really want to explore their life story and learn more about that. Our nurses, our discharge planners don't have an hour to spend with them. But let's get interested, motivated people from the community and train them how to do that, mm-hmm. and help people help each other through these really difficult times.
Well, thank you. And I want to also acknowledge that you're doing work in an important area in concert with the libraries and senior services in helping patients become more fluent in their use of MyChart and telemedicine, which is, you know, definitely became front and center during the pandemic, the need for that.
Right. That's through connections we made through the Livable Ashland Coalition. So the thanks is back to you.
It looks like Deborah has a question. You're muted.
It sounds like to me.
You're muted.
I'm sorry if I'm going to ask a question that you've already answered. I'm having some connection problems and keep getting disconnected, so I've missed part of your presentation. But I was curious to know, in coordinating support services post-hospitalization, how long do you follow up with a discharged patient? Like, is it do you have like a 6-week follow-up period? Is it just 1 week, the first week? I'm curious, you know, because of the initiative to keep people from reentering the hospital, I know that there have been more funding provided for post-hospitalization support services to minimize the risk of rehospitalization. So do you have any idea, like, or do you have an idea of how many weeks you might follow someone post-hospitalization?
So I can answer that. This is more of an Asante approach and initiative than age friendly, but they certainly overlap, don't they? So through attempts to reduce readmission and take good care of people, we have a number of efforts to do as you are saying. It really depends, though, on the patient's diagnosis and condition and on where they get their primary care. So we have for COPD and for heart failure and for diabetes, we have nurse navigators that help people navigate the system and navigate the transition from inpatient to outpatient. So our heart failure nurse navigator would work with somebody whose main diagnosis is heart disease or heart failure and make sure that they have an appointment with a cardiologist and make sure that they're taking their diuretic medication properly and follow up with them for a week or two after discharge until those transitions happen. For most patients, Asante will make a post-discharge phone call to make sure the transition is helping well. For patients whose primary caregiver is Asante, as Asante Physician Partners, Asante Physician Partners separately has a longitudinal care team that will follow people for months over time and address the social determinants of health, address people who aren't able to get to their doctor's visit and make sure they have transportation, address people who are having trouble getting their prescriptions, whether it's financial or intellectual or family or logistical barriers. So we have those. It's not as uniform as anybody would like it to be. And it's limited, as many of these things are, by funding, by resources. We can't do everything for everybody right now, but we certainly try to do as much as we can for as many people with the resources we have available.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Stephen? Go ahead, Steph.
How do you coordinate with patients that have physicians in that are Providence physicians?
So we coordinate as we would with anybody who has a non-Asante private care provider. We pick up the phone and I call Andy Kim or one of the providers up there and say, hey, I've got one of your patients in the hospital and they're getting ready to leave tomorrow. Let's talk about what's happened during the hospital. There's a couple of lab tests that I need to make sure you check in the next couple of days. And then I would add, this person has been part of our age-friendly cohort, and make sure you look at their after-visit summary for the important information we're going to put there that summarizes what we've done for this person.
So if you're an older person in Ashland, would you say there are advantages of having a physician that's aligned with Asante at this point?
I'm not sure I can fairly say that. There are a lot of very good I chose Andy Kim because I remember his name. Andy and I were both at with the Cedars-Sinai Medical Group in Los Angeles 25 years ago, and he was a neighbor of mine in Ashland for a while. So there are a lot of very good physicians here. I think it's more important that you find a physician that works for you, that you're able to get along with, that you feel heard by, than who they're affiliated with. I think the relationship probably should take precedence than who that physician is affiliated with.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, that about wraps up the time that we had allotted for your talk. So is there any final wrap up? Eileen, did you want to say anything at all?
Yes, thank you. I know this committee is interested in all the major issues that impact seniors, and we haven't had anybody come to speak about health-related things in a long time, and this is a very exciting initiative for our advisory committee to know about. And they are ambassadors into the larger community as well.
Well, thank you for your attention. Thank you for some very good questions. And we'll see you next time something comes up.
Very good. Make us feel good about aging in Ashland. Thanks. Okay. Very good. So I'm going to go back to the original agenda, which would bring us to the Livable Ashland Alliance update. If and if you want to update us on anything you might have regarding this.
Wait a minute. Okay. You know, we have had our meeting in June, and we are scheduled to have one in August, but I think there are some things that we're running into with our working partners, those of us who are retired and volunteering on this alliance, have more schedule flexibility. But Since this alliance is working on initiatives through our partners, we don't have a budget. We're not expecting the city to provide initiatives. We're identifying existing organizations with who are already out there and working on some of the things that we're hoping to work on collaboratively. But since they are working and busy, we're having a little trouble moving some things forward in terms of finding a meeting date. So I would say that's probably our biggest challenge right now. We also have been sort of waiting to make a big public announcement about the initiative because we were still updating first APRC and soon, hopefully, the City Council on what we're doing. They have received our interim progress report to AARP, but we haven't had an opportunity with the city to have a more interactive discussion of what we're doing and their responses to this report. So that's where things are.
Okay. Any questions at all for Ann, from anyone? Bless you. Next on the agenda then would be other items from any ASAC members. Is there any other questions or comments that weren't included in today's, go ahead, Ann.
Oh, I just want to acknowledge the fact that Senior Services Division and APRC are among the community partners who will be tabling at the Ollie Open House on Friday, June 22nd from 1 to 4 p.m. It's a free public open house, and so everybody's invited, but it will be an important opportunity for the senior services initiatives to be, you know, front and center with the community. We've had as many as 1,000 people at this event, and we anticipate it'll be more like 600 to 700 this time, just because of concerns with COVID. But it takes over the entire main floor of the SOU Stevenson Union. So there's participation from SOU programs, Ollie faculty and committee volunteers, and these 18 community partners, which includes senior services. And anyway, so if I'll probably send out a email to all of you so that if you haven't registered for it and want to, you'll have an easy way to do that.
Right. I see, Rob, you came on. Did you want to chime in at all on this?
No, thank you. I just I'm just here in support of Ann and Eileen and everyone else.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Corey, go ahead.
Well, I'd just like to get this added at some point that we partner with CERT, have CERT come. And one of the things I've been noticing with seniors that I've been interacting with and talking with them about their disaster preparedness is, do they have a grab and go bag, for example? And I finally had to show my neighbor what I meant and what should be put in the bag. And I think at some point I'd love to see at the senior center a CERT there with an example of a grab and go bag, what's in the bag and literally how to pack it, because that's what I've been trying to do with my neighbors. And it's kind of becoming bigger and bigger, and I can't do it all. So I'd like to see this happen to protect our seniors.
Could be a great reasonable request.
Yeah, could be an
if I could chime in, and I mean, you know, stop me if I'm speaking out of turn, but that does sound like a very appropriate presentation, Corey. So if you're not the right person to coordinate this, if you want to have
either give me their contact information at CERT or have them reach out to me. I think that would be a wonderful presentation. That'd be very helpful to host here.
I will get the right person to coordinate with you.
Thank you. That'd be great.
It's been a few years since we've done that. It was, you know, prior to COVID. I think that would be a great topic to come around. And I love your specifics about the go bag. That would give us a variation from the focus last time. So excellent suggestion. Thank you.
Yeah, I can almost see like a small display in the corner of the senior, you know, program that this is what it is. You know, this is what a to-go bag is, or this is what you should consider, something along those lines. But, well, good. Thanks for bringing that up, Corey. That's a good suggestion. Any other comments or suggestions from other members? Okay.
Mike, before you move on, I did have a suggestion on that.
Oh, yes, please.
Ali will have a course on this very topic in the fall term. And Natalie, I'll send you an email of the instructor who I think would be more than happy to do that for you at the Senior Center as well.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Can I just really quick, I'm so sorry. I am so frustrated. I have been disconnected 5 times. And so I'm just curious what you guys are talking about. What's the topic? Because I missed it.
So Corey Frank suggested that we have a discussion topic on CERT or relationship with CERT, and then focus more on like building a to-go bag for your emergency response.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. Thanks.
Something along those lines. Go ahead, Eileen.
I guess I need a little clarification, Corey. Were you wanting ASAC to have an educational presentation from CERT, or were you talking about our public audience and making sure we did something for our patrons?
I would like us to all understand what CERT is first. And secondly, and Mike said it much better than I did, I would like to actually see for our folks so they can visualize the bag, what should go into the bag. And it's a grab and go bag for disaster preparedness, particularly for our seniors. I think it's wonderful Ollie is having it, but some of our seniors are just coming to the Senior Center. They're not members of Ollie.
We have no problems with duplicating some of those topics. It's the wonderful sharing of resources or instructors sometimes that it helps in that collaboration. So what I'm hearing is a future guest speaker for ASAC and a public, one of our monthly education presentations for our patrons. So we'll work on calendaring both. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Eileen. Okay.
I just wanted to add, sorry, real quickly, Corey, because I don't know if we can schedule something that soon for our seniors here to know what's to pack in a go bag, but I believe CERT has some lists, including what people can put in a go bag. And if it's possible for you to maybe send me some of those, I could at least make those available for people here if they decide they want to take the initiative and not wait, because it could be many months until we can actually schedule something here. So if there is an easy sort of, you know, guide, where what CERT would recommend are the most critical things for people to have ready, that is in a one-page form, ideally, that we would be more than happy to put that here and maybe even include in our newsletter some of that information to try and disseminate that information sooner rather than later, because we're coming up on the season where people might need to be ready in that way.
And may I suggest, because I think it's so important, it's critical, that instead of waiting, that I like Mike's suggestion about having a display and somewhere at the Senior Center, just a little corner. I can literally take my bag in there if you want and unpack it and show, because you can give lists to people. I've done that with my neighbors. I had a hard time with just a list until I could actually get the duffel bag, put the things in it, and pack it and the whole nine yards. I just think it's the visual is so much easier. So you know, I'd be happy to.
We'll reach out to you, Lori. I think we can take this offline and work out the details.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, and the other option, and I know that some seniors aren't tech wise, so they may not be able to go, but there are so many YouTube videos on cert bags, you know, that are just helpful to see if you want the visual too, that they can watch on their own, in addition to getting a list.
Yeah, I'd like them to pack their bag, pack their parachute.
Okay, those are all great suggestions. I think we can long-term go for hopefully an educational half hour at this group, and then short-term or near-term possibly doing something that'll help seniors that frequent the senior center. So go ahead, Eileen, did you want to add to that?
Not on this topic, but before we close, I wanted to take the pulse a little bit on in-person versus Zoom meeting, when you're ready for that.
Yeah, well, we're ready right now for that.
Okay. So because staffing is short throughout Ashland Parks and Rec, this is one recommendation. It absolutely does save staff time, and really worked out today because I'm still recovering from something that so far isn't testing positive for COVID. So I was really glad that I could be with you today. I would not have come in person. If we can agree that it's okay to continue doing all Zoom, that would certainly be convenient. I have heard some on our committee wanting to meet in person. And I've also heard the suggestion of alternating, although, you know, it also depends on what the COVID conditions are. I'm a little worried that if we alternate or do some meetings in person and some on Zoom, that it will cause confusion, that somebody will be on Zoom at home and then realizing they were supposed to have left 20 minutes ago to drive to the senior center, or vice versa. But maybe I'm overstating the case. I'd like to just hear from you whether you feel like you can alternate and really track that.
Go ahead, Jim.
Muted. I think with COVID wave cranking up again, I just read about a new one in India, that we probably should just stick with 100% Zoom. And that plus the efficiency, we're not out of this thing yet. It looks like we're going to have some more challenges in the months ahead. So I think Zoom until further notice is my vote.
Okay. Looks like it's unanimous. You're muted, Eileen.
Now I'm muted. Yeah. Kathy, you were muted. Were you just saying, you were just voting for that? Okay. All right. Is there anybody who really wants to be meeting in person? I thought I'd heard that in the past, that there was some desire for that.
So the only thing for me, and I'm totally fine with Zoom, but sometimes people, if I don't lose connection, which I did today, I don't know what's going on. I mean, I missed about half of the meeting. And then even when I wasn't disconnected, there was some bubbles in people's speeches. So I would miss part of their sentences. That's the only thing with Zoom that is so problematic. And I really don't know why. I bought a brand new router and server, and it's, you know, I don't know why, you know, but it's been happening a lot. So
sorry.
But otherwise, I mean, just expect that that's going to happen with me. Yeah. But I'm fine with Zoom otherwise.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that support. That does make it much simpler for staff to just know what I'm doing, to know how to post it, and move forward that way. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else from any members? Okay, well then, we have scheduled our next meeting for Monday, September 12th, same time, 3:35. It will be a Zoom meeting. And we will, once again, appreciate everyone's participation today, and look forward to getting through the summer and seeing everyone in September, as the old song goes.
Thank you. So thank you to our guests that observed today.
Yeah. So thanks a lot, and meeting's adjourned, and we'll see you sooner, maybe on Wednesday the 13th for the ice cream social. Okay. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.